Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you two, Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
And tonight we are Drewless talking about the 1993's mega hit, The Pelican Brief. Well, it wasn't really a mega hit. But it turns out it has a long tail. This is one of those movies that ended up being played on cable and rented a lot.
Huh.
But it was directed by Alan Pakula from The Parallax View and All the President's Men. And also like Sophie's Choice. A lot more heavyweight movies than this turns out to be.
We're trying to see where the money is.
Let's see. Oh, I think it cost about $45 million and it made about something in the box office, but it had a tremendous amount of rental and DVD sales.
Estimated budget of 45, opening weekend 16, gross US 100, worldwide cumulative gross 200 million.
Yeah, so it was okay.
That's a pretty modest, that's decent return.
And this is only, I think, a year after The Firm. So the John Grisham movies had a pretty good run for a bit.
Because there was that one and then...
Time to Kill.
Which one was that?
That was the first book, but it was... Time to Kill was great. It was Sam Jackson and...
Kevin Spacey?
I don't think so. Who was the... Yeah. Was it Matthew McConaughey?
Oh, yeah.
Ashley Judd and Sandra Bullock.
Oh, that just sounds like it would have smelled bad.
No, it was great.
It turns out it's a little
problematic.
I've seen The Firm, and then what's the one with Susan Sarandon?
That's the Client.
Rainmaker, The Client.
Yeah, no, Rainmaker was Matt Damon.
Matt Damon.
And then there's Runaway Jury, and
I haven't seen either of the last two you mentioned. I've seen the rest of them.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I saw The Firm in a movie theater. I want to say
probably.
Maybe.
Firm was a big deal when it came out. And this movie was actually, the film rights were sold before the book was ever published or even finished. He did like a treatment for the book and sold the film rights on that. With Julia Roberts as the Darby Shaw character.
Was that on the strength of The Firm?
Yes. Yeah, The Firm was his big novel hit, I think.
I remember what year? Let's see. The Firm was 93. So I would have still been in Alaska. So that would have been.
So this was the same year.
So they came out in the same year.
Yeah.
That's wild.
So you'd seen this. Now, I don't know. I must have seen this movie before, but I think it's one of those movies that was so omnipresent that I maybe just avoided it. I never made the opportunity to see it because there's always something else to see.
Well, you're not a huge Julia Roberts fan, are you?
Well, kind of.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying. Yeah. The Firm came out in June and Pelican Brief came out in December.
Yeah. So I hope John Grisham invested in land.
He must be rolling in it.
He must be. And good for him. So, what are your memories of this movie? Did you remember liking it?
Oh, yeah. These are the kind of... I was trying to think of an analogy at work the other day. These are kind of the filet-o-fish of movies. Like, it sounds like a good idea when you kind of have that itch for just that specific kind of flavor, and then you eat it and you don't feel all that great, and then you're like, oh, I don't feel good, and then the next day you're like, you know, I like Filet-O-Fish. So So, again, I dig these movies. I've watched them. I have seen this movie a number of times. I think that appeals to me about this movie is that because I haven't read the novels, I wasn't able to jump to the end the first time I saw it. And it's been so long between watches that I didn't quite remember what was going on. So my failing memory helps in that respect.
Well, the beauty of the movie is, and we'll get into specific spoilers later, but the whole twist in the movie is this is not a movie about bad things and preventing the world from ending. This is a movie where a lot of bad things happen, and the reason for them happening at the highest levels of government really aren't that big a deal. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. As I was watching it too, I was like, well, isn't that a quaint notion?
Oh my God. So many times.
I will skip to the end and say, I was also really, I hadn't realized, I mean, how do I word this? I wasn't an epiphany, but anyway, I come to the conclusion last night, one of the things that makes me like this movie better than some of the other schlock that I watch that's okay-ish is that the lead characters don't have to sleep together.
Ah, well, you don't know the secret?
They hated each other?
No, not at all. Oh. Nope. In fact, in the book, they do sleep together. Because, you know, people going through stressful situations, you know, both people are single, one suddenly single. But actually it had a, it
was explosively single.
It was a very pragmatic reason. And actually it tells you a little bit about 1993 that I hope we're away from. The pragmatic reason was Denzel Washington was like, well, the studio was okay with this decision because they're like, well, we don't know if America's ready for an interracial relationship. But Denzel Washington was like, yeah, I don't think my fans would necessarily be ready for an interracial relationship. So the listeners would need to, you know, why I wasted on this.
So for the Denzel brand, you wanted to keep.
Well, it just would have caused him more problems than it was worth.
All right.
It's not like they would be breaking new ground by having an interracial kiss in 1993, but it was just it was enough of a thing to be like, no, I'm good with it not being, you know. Again, the course of this movie is over what, like a week, maybe 2 weeks,
maybe yes, a month. I mean, it didn't seem like it was a long period of time.
Yeah,
but when were Ted and Whoopi together though?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, like I said, this was not unheard of, but it was just a brand thing. It was a mutual decision among people. Because otherwise it would have been the Denzel Washington and Julie Roberts kiss movie.
I was grateful that they didn't sleep together in the movie. It didn't need to happen, and it would not have added anything material to the story. It would have actually made the ending not make any sense.
It would make it cheesy, too.
Cheesy. Imagine that. A schlocky, pulpy murder movie.
I think in the book, he takes 3 months off sabbatical and goes and spends it with her.
Mm.
Which this movie had a nice little ending that was not that.
Yes.
So. Anyway, like I said, this is the first time I remember watching it. I rented a copy of this from the library, and it was back, and I looked this up. This was not an unusual thing. The region 1 and region 4 releases of this movie were on a disc that you flipped over, so you could never watch it in a single part in region 1 or region 4 until it came out on Blu-ray in like 2003 or something.
Oh,
so it was crazy. Yeah.
I thought it was fancy when I had a DVD player that could read both sides. I didn't have to flip anything anymore.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
But you still had the pause. You could tell it was flipping over. It wasn't flipping over, but it was changing sides it read from.
Kids today, they don't know.
Now, I can't remember the last time I turned my Blu-ray player on.
I just took possession of all your parents' DVDs.
I don't even know if my Blu-ray player works at this point.
We were using our Blu-ray player primarily as a way to stream Netflix before we had smart TVs.
Oh, yeah.
And now we can just do it through our Dish Network box and a smart TV or a Fire Stick or an Apple TV thing. Before we dive into the plot, my first thought was I really enjoyed this movie and it is maybe an hour too long. However, I enjoyed all the time I spent with the characters. And it was chock full of familiar faces. So where you would consider this a fillet of fish movie, I would sort of consider this to be like a Saturday afternoon, you've got the TV on while you're doing other things kind of movie. This is a Mother Anderson movie for sure.
Oh, there was plenty of stuff that in today's audience, I could see that they would want to cut for brevity. Like the whole Alice subtext, her roommate or her cohort Alice, none of that added to the story, so that could have completely
it added subterfuge. To my viewing pleasure because it brought back memories but Alice's character went nowhere,
so there's a lot of little things like that that just
but this was also silly. Like a thriller type movie with lots of red herrings. I mean, this is sort of a classic kind of
that's a Grisham thing though, I suspect.
Probably.
How I remember is the same thing is similar with also Big Private Plane at the end of the movie. I think that's also a trope in Grisham novels.
Well, I think one of my favorite Grisham novels was The King of Torts. And that was a fantastic book.
You've read a lot of the books?
Some of the books. I would imagine Mom's read most of the books.
I don't know. I don't think she's I don't know, but I don't think she's a Grisham fan.
We'll have to find out. Mother Anderson. Right,
she's a Patterson fan.
Actually, we don't have a phone number anymore.
Oh.
Because except for Anthony Rotolo and Mom, nobody used it.
Oh.
So sorry, sad. Anthony. Sorry, Mom.
It went away.
Yeah, it went away. Yeah. Oh. And I think we have mugs that have the number printed on them that are sitting in my garage because I moved the box.
Not like anybody calls them.
Well, yeah. I'll just scratch them all out with a Sharpie before I give them to people. It'll be great.
You just get some of those gold Sharpies and then just mark them up with something.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious to see. In fact, Mom, take some notes if you're thinking about listening to this in the car, unless you're driving, in which case, keep your eyes on the road. But if you get a chance to see this movie again, let us know what you think, because I think this is sort of right up your alley kind of movie. I could be wrong.
It's got that murder mystery kind of feel to it. Yeah, well, I guess it is a murder mystery.
Yeah, a little bit of Agatha Christie meets the courtroom. Except this movie never goes to the courtroom.
Yeah. Well, I'm grateful for that, by the way. The suspense was sustained throughout most of this movie, even though I'd seen it before. I've seen this movie. I have to have seen this movie, I got to say, probably a dozen times, because as you said, it was omnipresent for years. So anytime it would be on, of course, I like a sucker, I'm like, oh, it's on TV. I'll just sit down and watch a couple minutes. And then, 3 hours later.
Yeah, well, because Denzel Washington and Julia Roberts are compelling.
Yeah, they are.
I mean, they've got chemistry on the screen, but again, it doesn't have to be romantic chemistry. They both act the shit out of these roles.
Yes.
And then you've got people like Stanley Tucci. Oh, my God. He's the best. We got John Lithgow. We've got Sam Shepard. I mean, we'll get into it.
Robert Culp.
Robert Culp. Exactly. Who, by the way, was maybe giving the worst performance or maybe the best performance in this movie, depending on what he was trying to play.
Would we like to make a comparison to who he may act like?
Oh, well, we're going to get into that, too. Well, actually, we might as well get into now. Robert Culp plays the president, and he plays the president as somebody who is, they said he was like as, I forget the quote, but basically all you had to compare to at that time was they said that, you know, he had the background shady dealing something of a George H.W. Bush and the day-to-day cognizance of what's going on of a Ronald Reagan, neither of which are compliments.
Yeah.
So he comes off as a guy who is, you know, is kind of dumb, not real connected, but like good with the people or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way,
miss those days.
Again, this movie is leading you to believe that this is all like treachery from the highest level of government. And it turns out the president just isn't all that savvy. I mean, like, the president really didn't do anything wrong.
No.
Except took donations from what turns out to be a bad guy who is seen in a photograph and is never seen in this movie.
Yeah.
The bad guy is never on screen.
Well, you don't need him.
No, it's great.
Yeah. I mean, that just builds more suspense because you never really see him clearly anyway, so he could actually be anybody anyway.
Exactly. And again, all of this drama and all this death, basically, caused over something that's, again, seems frankly kind of trivial.
I think that the benign nature of what they were after is probably, I mean, we've gone to war for oil, so, you know.
Well, yeah, and also, yeah, well, we'll get into some of the plot things that are spotted relevant owl, today. Right? Yeah, exactly. The quaint times of the spotted owl.
was it the pepper moth or the, I don't know, anyway, I don't care.
Yeah. So, okay, here's the plot. And again, this is directed by the guy who directed All the President's Men. Okay, a story about journalists who are uncovering, again, treachery on the highest level.
That explains a lot of the camera angles.
Oh, yeah.
Also, this movie open reminded me of Sneakers.
Yeah. Yep.
It had that was it Branford Marsalis? Branford.
Or Winton, one of the two.
Winton. I'm one of them. I'll look it up. But it had that same, the music was very similar. And so it gave me that same kind of angsty, anxious, like, it gave me that same vibe.
Yeah. 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 Well, again, this is a very sort of standard kind of movie, and in a good way. So, and this plot summary is from Wikipedia, because there is no plot synopsis on IMDb. So this is as close as we're going to get to a point-by-point thing, but we'll just dive in and dive out whenever we need to. So, the plot is, after two Supreme Court justices, Jensen, Ralph Cosham, and Rosenberg, Hume Cronin, legend, were killed by an assassin named Kamel, Stanley Tucci, Tulane University student Darby Shaw, Julia Roberts, writes a legal brief detailing her theory on why they were killed. Now, there's a little more scene setting. We learn that one of the justices, Hume Cronin, this is where we meet Washington Herald reporter Greg Grantham, Denzel Washington, who happens to be interviewing or maybe a friend of the justice, who is the sort of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. By the way, the protest scenes outside of the White House and the Supreme Court or whatever, I have never seen such a diverse protest. There were so many different signs with different causes all at once. It's like, oh my God. We went out to the protest, the equivalent of like the protest liquidation sales house, and bought all the signs I could.
Somebody clearly went to the back lot and was like, I don't know, what do you need? I don't know, just take all of them. Well, then we'll figure it out.
We need pro-gun, we need anti-abortion, we need anti-gun, we need pro-abortion, we need for war, we need against the war, we need everybody.
But I got to say, Denzel's gun on a stick was the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Yes, it was very funny.
Well,
little touches like Denzel in a hoodie can't get picked up by a cab.
That was...
great. Perfect.
Social commentary.
But totally social commentary.
Also, that he kicks the cab.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Like, he's like, your mother.
So we have the two Supreme Court justices, one of which, Rosenberg, is a total liberal And Jensen is a conservative, newer judge, actually appointed by the current president, Robert Culp. They are killed by an assassin. And turns out, we go to Tulane University in New Orleans, and we meet Professor... Go ahead.
Hang on. I want to pause here.
Yes.
So you have an assassin that can get in the house. Get in the house and get past a bunch of stuff, and then he shoots people. Wouldn't you want to, if you were really going to be a good assassin, wouldn't you do something that made it look a little less like you were deliberately murdering a Supreme Court justice? I don't know. Just one of those.
Oh, no. No, these were not going to be poisonings. These are intentional assassinations.
Yeah.
Which I think the book stresses that the point of this is because I think in the book there are scenes of like a bunch of porno theaters being burned down and a bunch of other, like the protests were much more heavy, I think, in the book.
All right. Well, I guess that may explain some of that. Also, at what point would you not be seen strangling somebody else in a porno theater that was that bright?
Hold on. You put a pin in the porno theater because okay. I've got so many questions about the porno theater scene. But we will get there in just a second, okay? I won't delay the dedication of the porno theater.
By the way, Branford Marsalis on the sneaker soundtrack.
There we go. Okay.
Which is available on Amazon for $11.98.
Oh, excellent. So... So I guess the idea is that there are so many, I don't know, much like the last couple of years and maybe next year, a lot of important, possibly, society changing cases hitting the court at the same time. So therefore, every vote matters and blah, blah, blah. Country is divided over issues. You know, it turns out that's a fundamental theme and perhaps will be before us and long after us. We'll see. But we go to Tulane University's law school, where we see Darby Shaw, Julia Roberts, who's in class with Alice Stark, Cynthia Nixon. We know Cynthia Nixon from the Manhattan Project.
Oh, wow. But we haven't reviewed the Manhattan Project, have we?
Well, we could if you want. It's not really worth watching, except for the Cynthia Nixon has this feathered hair. It's
I've seen that movie way too many times.
Well, also
that's also a Lithgow thing.
Point that out. Yes, Denzel Washington's boss in this movie is John Lithgow, who's also in the Manhattan Project. Spoiler: as the bad guy. So we see that Darby Shaw, Julia Roberts, is a law student who doesn't have a problem disagreeing with her professor. Now, we learn quickly that she doesn't have a problem disagreeing with her professor because she's also sleeping with the professor. So that maybe gives her a little bit more heckling room than, say, Alice, Cynthia Nixon, who is not sleeping with the professor. And Cynthia Nixon was also in one of my favorite movies, Little Darlings, with Tatum O'Neill and Kristen McNichol. Anyway, so
do you need a moment?
No.
Okay.
So, anyway, so Thomas Callahan, Sam Shepard from Mud, he is I think he used to clerk for Rosenberg.
Yes, that's what they made a big point of all about that. If anybody knows him, it's Callahan.
Yes. And Callahan.
Except that every time they would say Callahan, I would think of the Portland cartoonist in the wheelchair.
Yeah, it won't get far on foot.
But I'm bummed.
That's the name of his book and his movie.
Yes. There's a movie?
There's a movie, yeah.
Oh, because somebody played him, right? That was not in disabled?
Of course not. By the way, because this is a Denzel Washington movie, and because Darby Shaw is the name of the other main character, all I could think of was Manchurian Candidate, where Denzel Washington says, Darby Shaw is the kindest, bravest, warmest, most wonderful human being I've ever known in my life. Instead of Raymond Shaw. So, this one's for Drew. So, killing both of these justices doesn't make sense. It'd be like if somebody, now I'm not suggesting anybody do this, by the way, Secret Service, FBI, anybody listening? We'd be so lucky. We'd see our numbers climb so high. If we get a lot more downloads in Virginia, we'll know what happened. But anyway, I'm not suggesting this, but it's as if somebody assassinated both Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Brett Kavanaugh. That's kind of what this would be like. It's like, this makes no sense why this would happen.
Stranger than enough, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is nearly on her deathbed.
I know.
It's like, this is parallels. It's like life imitates art. By the way, Joaquin Phoenix played John Callahan. Ah.
Well, he's got a
breath defect. No. What?
He does. He's got the cleft lip. It's not the same, I realize. Anyway.
Wait, okay, never mind.
Back to the movie about politics. You know, Hollywood for ugly people. So, Darby Shah, who is the kindest, bravest, warmest, most wonderful human being in his life, is 24 years old, by the way. And her professor, it's a bit of a Callahan,
stretch, by the way.
Well, but her professor is, 60s?
1,000.
Yeah. So, well, not quite Hume Cronin, but yeah. Old enough to know better, but also an alcoholic.
Really inappropriate, of course.
And yet, probably happens all the time.
Oh, I'm sure. Because
that's one of the, traditionally, the perks of being a professor.
Tenure.
Well, depends on which way you hold the ruler. Anyway, so Thomas Callahan, who is sort of washed up. He was maybe going to be a justice or whatever, but he had problems with alcohol, blah, blah, blah. We get all this in quick exposition.
Master exposition at the bar.
Yes.
By the way, they serve him a martini in a goddamn Chardonnay glass.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. I'm not a bar guy, but it seems weird. That really
ticked me off. Okay. I'm like, come on.
But okay, so back to the porn theater, though. Hume Cronin gets killed in his home, which has like nursing staff because he's one foot in the banana peel and the other foot in the grave.
He has the most pills of any pharmacy I've ever seen.
Yes, he does. Yes. The other guy, though, Justice Jensen, is killed in a porn theater. Here's where I have my questions, okay? Because we've already seen Stanley Tucci in his jogging outfit jogging away from the justice's house.
I already have the answer for what you're going to ask.
Okay. I got like six questions, but the first thing is, okay, and I've never been, the only porn theater I've ever been in, I wasn't watching a porn movie. It was just like basically a former porn theater turned into like an art house theater, still with the sticky seats and broken, sticky floors and broken seats. But, and during that, it would seem simple, but did they sell concessions at a porn theater? Like, would you be munching on the popcorn?
Are you asking me personally?
I'm not asking you personally. I'm just more of a rhetorical question. Or the question to any mom, anybody in the audience, Anthony, Dougie, I don't know. We don't care.
We live in the Bay Area, so.
Yeah, we're not judging, but it seems like, you know, I mean, again, Paul Rubens and Fred Willard, rest in peace. Assuming that's kind of what you go to a porn theater to do, like, I don't know about you, but I've had a popcorn husk caught in my teeth, and it's a painful experience. I wouldn't want a popcorn husk caught anywhere else.
Well, what is it that you're doing with the popcorn tub, perv?
No, it's not that. It's just that, you know, it's a
collateral damage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Let's see. All right. Well, I will tell you that if my memory serves me, and again, leaky sieve and too old at this point, but the Aladdin Theater here, which is now a alternative, smaller, independent-ish venue for concerts, i.e. Rollins spoken word performances or
like one man shows kind of thing.
Yeah, kind of like something or obscure theater stuff. Like Billy Bragg is going to be here for three nights before COVID. So, you know, stuff like that. Stuff where you're going to fill a theater. You have enough, there's enough people in Portland that would fill it, but not probably a bigger venue. It's an old theater. It's old. And it has like a mezzanine balcony and a full snack bar, right? Mm-hmm. Before it was more reputable, it was down in history, I believe, as the theater with the longest streak of running. I just forgot. The
Behind the Green Door?
No.
Deep Throat?
Deep Throat.
Okay.
So I know they had a concession stand. I don't know. You know, who knows?
You know, but Deep Throat's in those movies where like hipsters saw Deep Throat to be hip. Like Barbara Walters saw Deep Throat. because she was a hip New Yorker.
Yeah. I have a Nixon joke about Deep Throat. I don't even know why. So.
Oh, well, we're just, again, it's a Pakula flick.
Yeah. So small world. Small world. So I don't know. I mean, having not been in a bunch of porn theaters, I got nothing. The only thing I can say is if it was a gay porn theater, of course they have snacks.
Okay. Well, there you go. Asked and answered there. Excellent. The second thing is, again, this is more about fashion in 1993.
Are you talking about the rope belt?
Yeah. Silk, like curtain rope. Like that you buy at Joanne Fabric?
That was actually a thing.
Really?
Yes.
Get out of town.
No, it was a thing.
That is crazy.
Now, it was a 70s thing. It wasn't a 90s thing, but it was a thing.
Oh, so I just, in my retirement, I should go out and just buy some, like, again, like a curtain cord.
Yeah. I mean, whatever you got hanging around, so to speak. Speaker wire, you know.
No, this was like an inch and a half thick satin rope, or silk rope, rather.
Well, yeah. And so the more bright it was and the more kind of flamboyant it was, the silkier it was, then the better it was. It's almost it's almost like the whole hanky code thing. You know, depending on how what the texture, what the color is, that can tell you something about a guy.
Oh, okay. All right.
Don't look that up, Mom.
So if it's just like your Joanne Fabric curtain thing, it's one thing. If it's a handmade macrame, that could be different than something else.
And if you got some like beads on it, or maybe you've got some charms.
Yeah. Oh,
and if you tie the knot on the left versus the right.
Then... Oh, get out of town. Anyway, okay, cool. So that answers a lot of my porn theater questions. Actually, all of them for this performance, but. Yeah, it's like, see, so the Supreme Court justice does the right thing and goes into the porn theater and sits like in a row by himself in the middle where no one's around him. But
okay, but is that really the right thing? Because he very poncily puts his hat over his crotch.
No, but okay, I guess there are two reasons you could go to a porn theater. One is you go to the porn theater expecting to be solo your entire adventure. And the other reason is you're expecting to meet friends along the way.
I see.
I can't imagine going to a porn theater to meet Eat friends popcorn. Along the way. But again, it's a lifestyle thing. That's, I understand. It's not for me. And certainly not in 2020 or whatever, God knows. We live in good times if you want to see pornography, I suppose.
Well, not right now. You don't want people in a theater right now.
No. What I mean is if you want to view pornography, you don't have to go anywhere else.
Yeah, why would you? Also, at this point, who pays for porn?
Well, that's a whole nother thing.
I mean...
Yeah. And yet, as, you know, so as a...
Straight white Midwest guys, that's who pays for porn.
Yeah, I suppose. Anyway, we won't get into our personal experiences, but...
I wasn't projecting, I was just...
No, it's, yeah. I'm just trying to,
says.
And of course, you know, there's lots of thoughts about pornography as a subject, but we're not talking about that.
No.
We're talking about a movie where the worst thing you have to fear in a dirty movie house is getting strangled by the guy's silk rope.
Well, he doesn't really strangle him as much as he breaks his neck.
Oh, no, yeah, exactly. He doesn't strangle him because it happens real fast.
With a rope that thick, that's not going to happen, first of all. Second of all, who isn't going to see that? There were other people there.
Yeah, this is not meant to be a super, like, it's not meant to appear to be an accident. And yet, you're right. How is he just going to, as you might say, pounce on out of there?
What? And he didn't.
He's going to...
He was popping popcorn, so to speak.
Well, theoretically, afterward, he... I don't know. Yeah, who knows whether he watched the movie to completion or not. Anyway. So.
Let's go out to the lobby.
Anyway. Yeah, to get yourself a treat. all right. So, thank you for answering my gay porn theater questions.
Well, I'm supposing. I haven't...
And again, I don't know how... it works out. Maybe the ticket sales are a big source of revenue in a porn theater, but in a regular theater, concessions are the big moneymaker, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Because the ticket proceeds go to the film distributor, the producer, the actual company.
Yeah, studios.
The film. Yeah, that's what I was trying to say very poorly. Yeah, the movie theaters make on the concessions, which is why reopening... That was a very loud noise.
Uh-oh.
Residual from July 4th. They keep shooting off these giant percussion-type things. Anyway.
Yeah. Did I tell you I heard there was a excess of, like, maybe this year fireworks are cheaper because of they canceled most of Chinese New Year? So they had a lot of stock on hand to get rid of.
That explains a great deal.
Yeah.
But what was I saying? Now I completely forgot what I was saying. What the hell was I talking about?
Back to porn. Oh, concessions.
Oh, I remember. Concessions in movie theaters. You know, now there's not going to be a lot of concessions in movie theaters because who's going to want to go to movie theater and eat? I don't want to not have a mask on.
There's that.
Turns out I don't want to be in a movie theater at this point at all. So,
back to the movie. So now we have this of course, double assassination thing, and the president has to look presidential. Remember when that was the thing? Callahan, the professor, is basically having pillow talk with his student Darby Shaw. And they were discussing why, you know, because like, what do the two of them have something like? What decisions do they have in common? And it turns out they don't really have any decisions in common.
Well, and the movie made a big point about calling them assassinations, which you say comes from the book, which is good because I was super pissed off that they just went right to assassinations. You don't know that it's an assassination. That's a long leap. I mean, somebody shot in their house. Okay, they were murdered, but you don't assassination. Where do you draw the line?
No, I think some of it comes to if you're a Supreme Court justice and you're murdered, that's an assassination.
But doesn't that imply a certain level of intent?
Intent to murder him, or yeah. Intent to further some political cause?
Well. So when you murder, we're talking
like
about this.
Murder. Yeah.
The last
intent.
Time I murdered someone.
Yeah.
No, I'm speculating that. Like, so you break into somebody's house, you shoot and kill them because you're a robber and bad guy. You murdered them, right? Yeah. You didn't assassinate them.
No, right? But these guys were assassinated.
Though. Well, no, but they don't know that. They don't know anything about that.
Well, yeah.
At the time that they're all saying it's assassinations, they don't even know who did it. And people are talking about assassination. So that's that was.
I think you're picking nits.
Well,
that's what we do here, though.
Yeah. I was going to say
family trait.
It really kind of. Anyway, okay.
No, that's fine. No, hey, it's nits are annoying. So Darby decides to take a week off of school and write a legal brief after doing some research, because she's a good researcher. Being a law student is a lot of research, I'm sure. Being a lawyer is a lot of research. So she goes and looks at all these things and finds out there is a connection. And they just broadly say they're both in are pro-environment. And they kind of leave it at that. So she gives this brief to her professor lover, who says, you know, it's, and she actually gives it to him and says, yeah, I don't, this is like outlandish. I don't think this is worthwhile, but it was.
After I was up for 7 days on caffeine and yellow jackets, you know, I, perhaps the mini thins, it sounded like a good time. And now that I'm sober, I'm not sure that this is even in this existence. So,
yeah. And
so she doubts herself and gives it to him. And it's like, I wouldn't waste your time reading it because I think it's crazy.
Yeah. But he reads it and he thinks it's interesting, although it's just kind of a stretch. But he happens to give a copy of it to his friend Gavin Verheek, played by John Hurd from In the Line of Fire, which leads me to ask, why haven't we watched In the Line of Fire for the podcast? It's got to go on the calendar.
It was on
soon.
The list for a while. I put it on the list a long time ago.
Okay, well, it's going to be on the list soon because
it's got all the things. But Rene Russo, right? Rene Russo,
it's where we all met.
What's his
John Malkovich?
John Malkovich, and then crazy Dirty Harry.
Clint Eastwood.
Yes.
Yeah. 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 No, it's great. It's a great movie.
It is a great movie.
Yeah. So, and we got to watch that. So anyway, so it also has John Hurt, who in this movie plays a Gavin Verheek, who is a special counsel to the director of the FBI. So there's, you know, of course, they're going to be going to the Callahan funeral, blah, blah, blah. Not, sorry. Spoiler. They're going to go to the Rosenberg funeral. That's where he gives them the copy of this thing. And then they come back. Callahan comes back and meets Darby at a bar. And they, because he goes on and off the wagon pretty quick here. And at the end of their date at the bar, he's too drunk to drive home. So she decided she's going to get a cab or walk because she's not going to, well, you know, get the keys.
Yeah, they have a little mini argument where he doesn't think he's too drunk to drive, which, yeah, that's
it's
the thing.
A shitty argument, man. I mean, it's a shitty place to be.
Yeah.
And but I think most of us have been there at some point.
If you say so. But you know, she good for her, by the way. She stands up and she goes, I'm not getting in a car with you. I'll take a cab. And he, the drunk ass that he is, he's like, see ya.
And then she gets the last laugh because he sets off the car bomb in his car.
Kablooey. Intent
to kill her.
Yeah. Oops. With the crazy human dummy that rattles around in the explosion in the car.
There's some cheese. Actually, both car bomb things are a little full of cheese, but that's okay. And she is a little bit overacting here. But what do you do, right?
Just a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. So in the background, we have, of course, Denzel Washington, who he has already been contacted by this guy, a Deep Throat-esque character who goes by Garcia, played by Jake Weber.
Like, why?
Who contacts him to say he has information about the assassinations because he saw something he shouldn't have. But he's got cold feet about whether or not, you know, like putting himself at risk. And turns out it's a legitimate concern. By the way, turns out whistleblowing is always a legitimate concern. So, you know. In this case, life or death. But yeah, anyway. So he gets to even to the point of meeting with Denzel Washington, but chickens out at the last minute or just disappears.
Well, they have that whole was that later in the movie where he, well, we discussed how he, you know, he's sitting in his car with the giant car phone while he's viewing him in the phone booth, which doesn't exist anymore.
Car phone doesn't exist anymore.
Phone booth doesn't exist anymore. Huge, gigantic telephoto lens.
Yeah, really gigantic but short telephoto lens.
Yeah. Black man in a car in Washington, D.C. snapping photos. Yeah, that would happen.
Yeah, Garcia calls and wants to be anonymous, but Grantham at least gets his phone number, so he uses his 1990s technology and friends to figure out who this guy is and ends up sort of tracking him down and gets a picture of him, but doesn't know who he is and never gets to see his documents. Meantime, Darby contacts...
Because the fucking racist won't give him a cab.
There's that, yes. And then Darby ends up calling Grantham, and she, by the way, is freaked out. Because her boyfriend, professor has been blown up, and her house has been gone through and all her computer and all her discs are gone.
And at the scene of the explosion, two people pretending to be cops talk to her.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. And by the way, I didn't get these guys' names, but like Tweedledee and Tweedledum, the assassins. The one guy is like the short, bald, like fire hydrant type guy who just like I couldn't tell whether he was like a Terminator, like a T-119 or something. I mean, he's crazy over the top.
It was a little distracting.
Yeah, but in the meantime, there's all these people watching Darby, because it turns out. This case involves the CIA, maybe, and the FBI, maybe. And and this is where we meet the president's chief of staff, who is Fletcher Cole, played by Tony Goldwyn from Ghost and Nixon. And again, he is a surrogate for like the main villain. And there are definitely some unethical things that he is doing, which, as it turns out, may just become part of the job. I think the charm of our current president is none of it is subtext. Our current president deals with all of this just in capitalized text.
I wrote a president that won't interfere with an investigation. How quaint.
Oh, no. Hold on. I can't do that. No, you can't get caught doing that.
I wrote down at the point, like the third person gets murdered in this movie next to Darby. I'm like, that bitch is Angela Lansbury.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was waiting, by the way. I thought Cindy Nixon's number would have been up like three times in this movie.
That's it. I was expecting that as well, which is why I was commenting that her whole character doesn't need to be in the movie.
Yeah.
If only to have maybe murdered her, but I suspect maybe that was a deleted scene because this movie was 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this is a long movie, like I said.
It was.
And yet, all of it was filled. I mean, the pace was pretty good.
Yes.
So, and of course, we have all these characters, all these red herring people.
There's a ton of characters.
Yeah. Now, Gray Grantham, journalist, he actually
great,
has
great name, by the way.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of these names that are like a little too on the nose. You know, Smith Keene, Cole Fletcher, Gray Grantham, Darby Shaw, and then Kumail.
Kamel.
Yeah, okay. You potato, potato.
They said Kamel in the movie.
No, I know. I know.
Oh.
Kumail is one of my favorite action heroes of this last year. So, you know, what can I say? I think Jerry would agree if she's all hopped up on the goofballs.
We love Jerry. We do love Jerry. I've got to get her to watch Sordid Lives with me, but...
Yeah. Okay. So... Grantham, as a journalist, he has to find sources. And so far, he has no sources, and he doesn't even have the copy of this brief or any evidence of anything, which is why John Lithgow says, dude, you got to go to Arkansas to cover this election campaign, because, by the way, it's also an election year. Imagine that. Imagine, by the way, being able to nominate Supreme Court justices during an election year.
Imagine
that'll
that.
Never happen again, right? Back to fiction, which we're all comfortable with. So
this movie was prescient.
Yeah. So Darby doesn't know who to trust, which again, it's a great thriller kind of thing. No, of course not. No.
Yeah,
like, so who does she know? She knows James Vanderbeek, who's the guy who's the lawyer in the FBI, who is Callahan's friend. Not
James
the actor.
Vanderbeek.
No, and the character's name is Verheek.
Oh, Verheek. I was like, yes. I don't remember James Vanderbeek in this movie. Like,
no, not at all. No, it's John Hurt, by the way.
Although I did think the crazy rehab dude was Jason Priestley.
Yeah, could have been. Yeah. More explosions?
I have my door open because I'm the only one home right now. Because if I close the door and the dog's home, he will howl at the door. And because of that, I'm hearing noises I don't normally hear. And it just... Oh. Because I'm home alone, it freaks me out a little.
If you got to go run for the ice cream man, just let me know.
I don't run for the ice cream man. I have a freezer full of ice cream. I'm a fat guy. I don't need to run.
I want my way to the ice cream man. Stop.
I just got to go to the basement.
Ice cream. No, hey, I have a refrigerator story to tell you.
Okay.
I'd go to the ice cream man just to buy some ice. So, blah, 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 twists and turns. I mean, again, we can yada yada through a lot of this stuff. But we have a fun scene where she tries to get a hold of Verheek, who, again, is the one that Callahan gave the brief to and is the FBI guy.
And
she agrees to meet him.
The implication up to this point in the movie, you don't know if he's a good guy or a bad guy.
You don't. No. Yes. But, you know, he claims to weigh 180 pounds, but is going to lose it, which makes Stanley Tucci put a pillow under his belly.
Ridiculous.
I would kill to be 180 pounds.
I would have to kill to be 180 pounds.
Exactly. Yeah, I would kill myself to be 180 pounds. And at that rate, it would still take months. Okay. So
self-deprecating humor is the best.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe if I threw myself into some sort of wood chipper, I could get down to 180 pounds.
There's a Heather Mills joke in there somewhere, but
oh, Paul McCartney's wife?
Without the leg.
Well, yeah, but did she lose her leg less. To a wood chipper?
No, I'm just saying she weighs a little less.
You Isn't know? She dead?
Is she? Did she die? Yeah,
oh, I think so.
Sorry. Yeah. Soon. It's not like it's too soon.
No, I know, but I mean, her casket weighs less, I suppose. So, I don't know. They don't. Yeah, they don't bury you with your prosthetic. That'd be silly.
I don't know. Why would it be silly? Who else is going to want a prosthetic that's hers?
Yeah, but can you throw like other things in the casket? Can you throw like your trash because you missed trash day?
Like, well, having cremated someone, I put all kinds of stuff in, so.
But okay, so but if you had like a shrimp ring that was left over from the reception the night before, could you throw your bag that had a half-eaten shrimp ring in?
The- two-liter, my 40-ounce bottles. And,
yeah, you whatever,
know.
You know?
Yeah, the little cocktail hot dog trays.
Yeah, because it's not good reheated. So come on, man. Okay, so, sorry.
Wow.
If anybody who's a mortuary scientist wants to come on and talk about that kind of stuff, we'd love to hear about it. We have so many questions. I know they have to notify the fire department when the local crematorium's like the cook a fat guy because the neighbors call in.
Oh my God.
Because it creates more smoke.
Ew.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a real thing.
Yikes.
Anyway. Okay. So she calls and wants to contact. This friend again, friend of her boyfriend's, who he's in town for the funeral or whatever of her boyfriend, and so they agree to meet, and she tells him like she's never met him though. That's the thing. So she tells him what to wear and ask what he looks like, and they agree to meet at this very 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 public place, the Riverwalk in New Orleans or whatever, right? Super public place. It reminded me both of, well, there are a couple things this movie made me think of. One was Baby Driver, when they have the scenes in the parking garage, where they have to jump over those, like from level to level, which that was interesting. Mm-hmm. This also reminded me a little bit of The Conversation, where you see like that big, like plaza, whatever. Although this was much more heavily, peopled, let's say. By the way, how many people were trampled to death after that shooting in the plaza? There were injuries, for sure. But, yeah, so Stanley Tucci, the Tooch, puts the Tooch into Verheek. He kills him and basically assumes his identity for purposes of meeting Julia Roberts.
So Kamel is murdered in the square, as it were.
Yes, uh-huh.
Where did that come from?
Who murdered him?
No. I mean, I'm just saying, like, it just came out of nowhere.
These are professionals.
Yes, seemingly.
You have to just accept this one and move on.
Yeah.
So she is about to be murdered, although she doesn't know it. And then, boom, we trick the audience and we kill Kumail.
It's pretty suspenseful, even having seen it before.
No, it's good stuff. Yeah, absolutely. No, there's a lot of things. In fact, there's a second car bombing in this movie where they tease it out in a way that I'm like, no, they're not going to. Oh, they're like, oh, this is not just funny. This is just comic relief, actually.
It is.
Yeah, which is pretty clever. I mean, I already dug it. Anyway.
Yeah, that anyway, we'll discuss it when we get there.
Yeah. So, so then we have now another person who is, you know, she's the angel of death. By the way, I have a question about Hamilton. Have you seen Hamilton now?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know there's an angel of death character in Hamilton?
I did not realize that, but
apparently there's a character, I haven't seen it. Apparently there's a character at the end that kind of guides the bullet, a female that kind of guides the bullet, right? But if you watch from the beginning, after she shakes hands with somebody, you see that's the first time, and everybody else in the movie that dies has a last scene with her before they die.
Oh. Yeah. I'll have to rewatch, because I was not that smart.
Just that in mind, yeah.
Okay.
Wild. These people are pretty smart there, these Lin-Manuel Miranda guys.
Jesse and I watched the first half of it together, and he liked it, but then he was like, there was some character that he really didn't like, and he didn't like their singing hook, the hook in the song that they would constantly, and he was like, I can't do this anymore, and he just leaves the room.
Oh, wow.
It's like, just threw up his hands like, I'm not doing this. Oh, sorry.
Wow.
Glad I waited to watch it with you.
All right, Father Anderson.
I did have the subtitles on, though. So.
Oh, of course, yeah. Yeah. No, and we're going to watch it eventually. Journey wants to see it at some point, so we'll do
that. Also, I'm glad I wasn't in the front row, because it's like a Gallagher show. There was a lot of spitting.
Oh, yeah?
Which I guess is normal.
Well, yeah, exactly. So
Darby strikes again.
The master assassin, by the way, according to the book, he's the most wanted assassin. So this movie doesn't like lead you to believe that. It just believes that he's a professional.
Yeah. So because he's not good.
Well, he's good until he's not. As that kind of thing goes.
Well, I suppose.
I mean, he's good for the Supreme Court. He's good for the FBI lawyer.
Good being relative. Good for the Supreme Court.
Well, no, he's not good for the court. He's good at his job.
Yeah.
Okay. With regard to the Supreme Court justices.
Yes.
And FBI lawyers. Just not important witnesses. Or not even, she's not even a witness to anything. She wrote a story.
Story that hasn't even been proven yet.
Yeah. Or published anywhere. I think that's the point. But anyway, so... and which is, by the way, another thing where she's a fish out of water because she doesn't know anything about anything. She's a law student. She's not even a lawyer. She has no talent. She's 24 years old, doesn't know shit about shit, but may have solved the biggest mystery of 1993's presidential election. By the way, now Darby calls up Grantham and so agrees to meet him in New York City. And then we have the scene where she shares the whole theory. And we learn that this whole theory, the Pelican Brief itself, is saying that there's only one thing these guys agreed on, and it's the environment. And there's one big environmental issue to be solved this year that could come up, could be a multi-billion dollar, the result of which could be a boon for a very rich oil tycoon or a bust. And I think they mentioned the word like $4 billion, which again seems so quaint, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like $4 billion? Shit.
we spent that on the deficit in less than a month this year.
Yeah. Are you kidding? Here's the theory is the assassinations were done on behalf of oil tycoon Victor Matisse. A name straight out of Young and the Restless, Days of Our Lives, or Santa Barbara.
Ooh, nice pull.
Thank you. Well, got to get to my theme songs one way or another. So, Victor Matisse... has organized this whole thing where he's going to assassinate two Supreme Court justices so that his presidential friend who actually, maybe they didn't mention $4 billion. Maybe it was just the $4 million he gave to this president's campaign, how that was specific.
Every time I heard the name Matisse, I thought of the dog from Down and Out Beverly Hills.
Oh yeah. There you go. So he's basically, he is the most generous contributor to President Robert Culp.
It's all legal. Proper channels.
Well, and that's kind of the thing. So Victor Matisse is the big bad guy. Like he's trying to make a shit ton of money through oil. He don't care about no endangered pelicans.
Damn PBS.
Exactly. The president, even the chief of staff, they're not responsible for any assassinations. They're just going to be tarred by their association. And also the fact that the president asked the head of the FBI to stall the investigation. Which, again, that used to be against the law. But if we consult one Attorney General Barr, he might have some thoughts about investigations. Anyway.
You don't
or
say.
Or maybe not. Yeah. Yeah, so... Grantham then tells her about Garcia. So they go to find Garcia. And again, this is a lot of like tension, a lot of fun sort of cat and mouse, where they go to the law firm of White and Blazevich and they try to find this oil and gas attorney. And turns out he was killed. So they managed to get out of the building without being accosted by security. And, well, without being
stopped,
detained by security. Exactly. Yeah, they were accosted briefly. Or she was. So then they go visit the widow. And the widow gives them a key to the safe deposit box.
Dun, so, dun, dun.
Yes. So they go to the bank, followed by the
Riggs Bank.
By CIA agents, by assassins. I mean, they actually must work for the Matisse group, right? Because it involves that little fire hydrant guy.
Yeah.
Who plants a bomb.
And that odd woman.
Yes, yes. Again, I thought her character would come to something too, but
in the strange shoes and the funny outfit.
She didn't even have a speaking role, but she was very noticeable.
She didn't talk at all.
No.
Actually, I think if they don't talk, they make less scale.
I'm sure they do, yeah. So they managed to get documents out of the safe deposit box. They escape the death of the car bomb. Yada-yadding some pretty fun stuff. And again, some yakety sax with the being both in the car with the car bomb in it and Denzel Washington either trying to start or not trying to start the car, depending on the situation.
Were you having an aneurysm over the keys, not keys?
Oh, it was great. Yeah.
And she's like brushing off his hand.
Yes, yes. She holds his hand at one point and takes him off. Also, I was trying to figure out why.
And then he does that lilty, jaunty, jolly thing where he holds the keys up to the side of his face like, oh.
Well, and it's like, I couldn't, because I'm not a bomb maker, I couldn't figure out why you needed the mercury switch in addition to, because it turns out, and like, it wasn't, like, just engaging the starter didn't trigger the bomb. Something else triggered the bomb. Like, maybe when the ignition caught or something, I don't know how that works out or why there's mercury involved, but oh well, it's fine. No big deal.
It was a MacGuffin, really.
Yeah. And that bomb blew up eventually after some like cat and mouse.
Misadventure.
Involving the pointy-nosed woman who saw them in a reflection of the chrome on the rearview mirror on the side of the car, right?
On the side mirrors of the car.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. That's a fantastic piece of business.
Yeah, no, it was interesting. It was an interesting little thrown in kind of effect.
Yeah, yeah. Unnecessary, sure, but fun.
Oh, so it was nice to see her get scared the crap out of by the dog.
Yeah. Well, and so the tape confirms Darby's theory, and Morgan's documents prove his own discovery that Matisse ordered the assassination with the justices, and so Grantham writes his story. And finally, because now I thought that maybe John Lithgow's character would have been involved in the big old thing, too, as the editor of the newspaper. But nope, he just needed the real sources because, you know, it's a real thing.
Yeah.
Jason Robards would have told him the same thing.
Yeah.
So they managed
the word tits. This is a family newspaper.
So he gives the FBI a chance to comment, which is pretty fun. And this is where the FBI director turns out not to be a bad guy.
Well, he turns out not to be a terrible guy.
Well, he's in, like, I think three of Grisham's novels.
Same guy?
Same character, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Director of Royals, yeah. It plays by the way, James Sicking from Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. And you know why? Because a good FBI director would find Spock. See? Anyway. So... they confirm that her Pelican brief was delivered to the White House. You know, when did they know it? Well, when do they know it? He also reveals that the president ordered the FBI to back off and that the CIA is investigating Matisse. And one of the CIA killed Kamel to save Darby's life. So this is all they confirmed, a lot of which off the record. But and then a plane is arranged for Darby to flee the country. By the way, I don't know about you. But in 2020, if they said, hey, yeah, we'll send you anywhere you want to go. Just get on our plane. It'd be like,
nope.
I want you on the plane. I want your youngest child also on that plane. No fucking way I'm getting on a plane to nowhere.
Drone strike.
Yeah, a horrible accident happened. Sucks to be that pilot who had to take one for the team.
Yeah.
But we're going to get some oil out of it, man.
Was it Payne Stewart?
Yeah. Yeah. Although I don't think he was assassinated. I think he just had an unfortunate accident with
people. How do you know?
I don't know.
Yeah, see.
What is it? People who expected him to wear slacks? Is that
him? It's the Peggy Lipton Golf Association group or something.
Oh, it's the dreaded...
LPGA.
Yes.
I don't even know why I know that.
Sometime later. And by the way, I don't have my notes, but who's the reporter that we keep cutting to? Legendary reporter.
Oh, was it? It looked like not Ed Meese. Oh my God, I can't.
I know I'm gonna have to look it up because it would drive me crazy.
Edwin Newman.
Excellent.
I recognized him, but I couldn't remember his name. He's been, I've watched all kinds of stuff that he did.
So yeah, so basically the FBI says, yeah, we will send you out of the country. And Grant Thinkman writes his story. So he writes a story and he's interviewed. And people are saying that maybe Grantham, who did not, he of course did not name Darby Shaw as his source. They're suggesting that maybe Grantham just made up his source. It was just a figment of imagination, too good to be true. And he says that he agrees that she is almost too good to be true. Winky, winky, nudgy, nudgy. And she gets a smile from, as it turns out in the book, her Caribbean island destination.
It didn't look Caribbean in the movie.
I'm just seeing
so, Edwin Newman, by the way.
Yeah. Does he even associate with Saturday Night Live?
I don't know. But I think he was on the Today Show, I want to say. 1952? Wow.
Yeah. He was on the Today Show in 52?
I'm trying to scroll back, but the reason that I mention him is because his IMDb credits for movies, the top three items on the front page, The Pelican Brief, Spies Like Us, My Fellow American, starring James Garner and Dan Aykroyd.
Oh, is that also Jack Lemmon?
Yes.
Okay. And does he have SNL credits?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Also, New Hollywood Squares.
Okay,
excellent. Super Password. Yeah, lots of... he was a substitute host for the Today Show. Let's see.
So he was a journalist at some point?
I'm guessing. Let's see. Starting in 58. So the Today Show, 58 to 82. Done tons of stuff.
Yeah.
He was a moderator in the 76 presidential debates.
Ah, okay. There we go.
So, I mean, that...
must have been a big-time journalist.
He was on the Mike Douglas Show. He was on Johnny Carson. And these are all things why I would know. Yeah. So why I meet the press. That's the other thing. Meet the press.
Okay. There we go.
So, all right. I'm like, okay. Now it makes sense why I recognize it, because I'm like, I saw him. Ed Newman reporting TV series, he was the host. So yeah, he's been him and Chet Huntley.
Yes. Back where Brinkley Huntley, right?
Yeah.
Brinkley Huntley were like a news team in the Vietnam War area.
Yep. So anyway.
Okay. So any more notes on the Pelican Brief?
Nope. We covered all my notes.
Excellent. So what's your grade?
This is actually, I think, an A movie. A minus, you know.
Yeah.
It's not a top tier A movie, but it's got good acting. It's got good suspense. It's got action. It moves. It's a little dated and rough around the edges. The special effects blood-wise are a little odd. There's some odd choices in how they do the oblique murdering, which I actually kind of appreciate because you don't see anything outright.
Yeah.
You know, I think you and I, as we discussed, it could be a bit shorter. It could be tightened up. It could be certainly, I think it would have been a better 2-hour movie than it was a 2-hour 20 movie. But that may also just have been the sign of the times, considering that this was the follow-up from The Firm, which was 2 hours and 20 minutes as well. So
sure. And this is, you know, again, this is a like a blockbuster type movie.
Oh, yeah. It made plenty of money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think history agrees. I think Roger Ebert gave it 3 stars.
That's not bad, saying
that, you know, the plot kind of whittles down to being kind of simple, but that's okay. You know, that it wasn't really aspiring to be much more than it was. And it was super entertaining just because of the performances.
Yeah, it didn't need to be about necessarily something big. It was more about the story than it was the brief.
Yeah, it's kind of a popcorn movie, really.
Yeah, it really was.
Yeah, a popcorn thriller.
Yeah, filet of fish flavored.
I was gonna say it's a popcorn thriller, although I'm still not buying my popcorn at the concession stand at the gay, any kind of porn theater. Really, I'm discriminating.
Yeah, you don't know what's in that butter flavoring.
Yeah. You know, people that put their M&Ms in their popcorn. Yeah, those aren't M&Ms.
I worked at a movie theater. I've seen some horror things.
Yeah, I remember your bubbly shoes. Haunt me to this day. Here's a dream time with Eric, now that we're kind of past.
I can't believe you remember that.
Oh, I totally remember it. The fact that the artificial butter flavored grease made your shoes like bubble, or actually probably, well, it was probably the cleaners that you used to clean up the grease or whatever. But
no, yeah.
It was like the shoes, like the rubber on the work shoes were all like disintegrated.
It was the butter flavor. It was not the cleaner, because I never cleaned the concessions.
Yeah. Well, that explains a lot, too.
I cleaned theaters out, but never the concessions, so.
Well, you were the floor manager at some point.
I was the chief of staff.
I mean the floor manager, meaning that's your first job you get is you go and clean up the popcorn off the floor.
Oh.
You told me that at some point.
Yeah. Those were the days when they actually cleaned. Well, I think they still clean anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Better.
More than ever, probably. Yeah. So.
Good times.
Here, dream time with Uncle Eric. I don't know, our kids aren't listening to this, but I've been on vacation, so I've been able to like take naps or go to sleep when I feel like going to sleep, getting up when I feel like getting up, you know, around the schedules of my family. But I had a very vivid dream. I was going with Dad when he was buying a car. He traded in an Explorer, like an old Explorer. It wasn't something new. And we drove home in the wintertime in like a Buick Skylark or something like that. It wasn't your Buick Skylark. It was just a Buick.
Whopper with cheese.
Yeah, I remember it. And I was on the way home, I kept saying encouraging things because, as I tell my wife, my Al-Anon friends would suggest I'm a people pleaser. So I was saying encouraging things like, oh, you know what? It handles really nice or whatever. Or, you know, this is actually roomy inside. And then later in the dream, I text Drew and asked him how it went. And he sends his message back laughing, saying, yeah, Dad's already taken that car back. But no Buick? Yeah, the salesman was not happy, but yeah, he just hated that car. And I was like, oh, yeah, of course. That's a crappy car. Why would you buy the car? Anyway. So again, I'm a people pleaser, even in my dreams. It's a sad thing.
Anyway, wow.
So yeah, don't dig in that too much. But
some car anxiety, huh?
No, I don't know what it was about. Don't care. Not until next week do I have to worry about work stuff anymore. Although, again, I think I have a story for after the podcast about work stuff. But, yeah, on to housekeeping.
Housekeeping. I thought I was going to have to murder somebody today, virtually. Not today. Sorry. I didn't work today. This week. My department is coming to the fruition of a 5+ year software project, which is supposed to happen Monday night. So, I worked yesterday after I worked till midnight.
We were recording on a Friday.
Yes. So Thursday I worked after my normal hours until midnight. Today I got up. Today's my Friday off. I worked all day until 10:30 when I took the dog to the vet. and had a conference call when I had to juggle the conference call and the vet on two different phones, which was good because I had to put the conference call on hold. So that was a little different.
It was like a remote vet visit?
No, I took him to the vet.
Okay, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, I drove to the vet and I had my work phone with me, and so I had Google Chat and did the Google Hangouts, Google Meets, whatever.
Yeah.
Not Arby's Meets, Google
Meets. I was going to say, the Google Meets goes with the Google Cheeses.
Yeah.
It makes a charcuterie platter.
And then I came home and went back to work. So I've been working. I'm probably going to end up working all weekend long just on cleaning stuff up before this whole thing. But a week and a half ago, we had discussed that the vendor was concerned that because we've been on the system as long as we have, which is 10 years-ish, a little bit less, and we have 7 stores, there's a lot of data. And their normal business model is to come in Monday night, they convert everything over, and Tuesday morning you come in and you run the new software. Well, like a week and a half ago, they threw us a curveball and said, we actually aren't going to be able to get through all of your conversion in a single night. So we need to look at alternatives. And so we were like, we're like 10 days out, right? Like you're discovering now 10 days out, we have to change. By the way, we've already scheduled staff. I've already rearranged staff. I've already told people they couldn't have vacation time. This has been a thing for like 6 months. So this was like 10 days ago. And so we said, okay, we'll back everything up. We'll close on Friday at normal time. And then you guys can have the week because we're not open on weekends. So
yeah,
you can have Saturday and Sunday to completely do whatever you need to. And then Monday morning we'll come in, have our training for 4.5 hours or whatever. And then we'll have like a soft open at noon. So we'll only be closed like half a day, which not bad, not great, not ideal for a Monday, but, you know, could be worse, right? And then we had a call, I want to say Monday of this week, where they said, now we figured it all out. We're going to come in on Tuesday.
On Tuesday?
Which is where Monday night.
Yeah.
They're going to come in, which is what the original schedule was. This is after we have already redone everything to accommodate them coming in on Friday. So now sweet. I have to undo this. So I've changed the master schedule for my department because I'm the scheduler.
Yeah.
So I've done this, I don't know how many times. I'm ready to, I'm screaming into the abyss. So it's been a lot of back and forth.
So you guys have a pool going when you're really going to go live?
Well, now they've committed. So they're going to come on Monday as normal. And we're going to follow their business model, which is we're going to close our stores at 12:30 on Monday. They're going to be there by 1 o'clock-ish. We will probably be done with our stuff by 2 or 3-ish. They'll start swapping equipment out and getting us all ready to go. And they're going to do that until 8 o'clock Monday night. And then conversion will kick off.
They didn't do any conversion yet.
Well, they've done test runs. But okay. They can't do any conversion yet because we're still live. Like we're adding transactions every day. So they can't – it has to be done all at once. So Monday night, Monday, they're going to take the servers. We're going to copy our production to our backup system, and they're going to pull the backup system so they're not impeding us from viewing stuff. And then on Tuesday morning, we come in, and we have a couple hours. We'll open at noon, soft opening hopefully, and it should all go fine. Except all these people are flying from like Louisiana and Texas. So you're going to have a bunch of strangers in my pharmacies.
There's no way it's going to go fine.
No,
there's zero chance it's going to go fine.
So,
I wish you all the best. Don't get me wrong.
I wish you all the best. You forget. I did this for a living. I know what's going to happen. I am cognizantly aware of what is ahead of me.
Rodeo.
I'm just telling you what everybody else is repeating. And I'm like, I'm just going to stay calm and be like, because everybody's like, oh, this will be fine. I'm like, it'll be just fine. It'll be just fine. Don't worry about it.
Nice.
So, but I digress. We will talk about, so boyfriend Jesse did not watch this movie with me. And he didn't finish Hamilton with me. And I don't know if the two are related, but he has taken it upon himself to take over the basement, as it were, Derek's former domain. And he's done some things with a beta testing game he's working on, because Derek had a super massively overpowered computer that he didn't use, but he gamed on. And so Jesse's using it for some gaming thing where now he's live streaming on Twitch or whatever the hell that is. And I'm old enough. I'm like, I kind of know what it is, but don't care. And so he's spending a lot of time on that, which is good and bad. It's nice to have, especially because I'm working a lot right now. It's nice to not feel like I'm abandoning time together because he's occupied. But it turns out the things that used to annoy the fuck out of me when Derek was in the basement are also the things that boyfriend Jesse's now doing. So
yeah.
I'm like, I understand that you want to listen to really loud music. I'm actually in my office trying to work, so I get it. But maybe just have some awareness about people outside of your head. So we're having those kind of friction issues. So that's, you know, but took the dog to the vet. The vet's like, hey, your dog really needs tranquilized before you bring him next time.
I'm yeah, like, so do I, vet.
I said, yeah, the problem is because the vet now, we can't go in with him. They come out and get him from the car. I'm like, well, he's going to have some anxiety because he doesn't know you people. So, because normally when they do stuff, I'm in the room with them.
Yeah.
Right. So I said, so they were like, well, you next time you need to tranquilize him with, well, I don't know what they told me to give him. And I said, I did that last time and it didn't work. So you're going to have to suggest some other drugs. And they said, well, you could try this other drug. And I said, that's what he was on last time. They said, oh. And I said, I have this other, this, I forget what it is, ace promazine, I think. And they said, he's too old now. You don't want to give him that. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, that's good to know. At any rate, so it's been a long day. I'm probably going to work all weekend long. No,
I'm sure.
Not probably. I am going to work all weekend long. But at least I get to work from home. So I'm not complaining. I'm just like, I'm already like, my weekend is not mine. And Monday's going to be a very long day and a very long night. And next week's already a very long week.
Oh, man. I cannot imagine.
It'll be good when it's done. That's the thing. It's when it's finally done, because we will get to do things we weren't able to do before because of the limitations of our software, which means we will actually increase our revenue. And in this economy right now, that's a good thing.
Exactly. Yes. Working for the government and increasing revenue is almost impossible. So good on you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, pharmacy always makes we don't make money, but pharmacy has always been self-sufficient. We break even.
Yeah.
This will allow us to put funds back into the health department. So,
Well, 4th of July, we went out to the lake house, which was fun. And then on the 7th, which is my mother-in-law's birthday, we were going to go out to Palmer to see her for her birthday. And we haven't seen them since March, you know, before the big
COVID
lockdown.
Yeah.
And, it was kind of in the air. We were kind of laughing about it at the Red Robin. And then that was like, you know, 3 months later. We see them for the first time, and it was great. It was fine, except that we didn't go on the 7th because I was actually, frankly, sitting on the couch a little irritated that my family wasn't getting a move on, because it was like we were supposed to leave at 10:30, and it was like coming up on 10:15, and nobody, Kelly hadn't had a shower yet, and I was like, so I was like a little grumbly in my head. And I'm sitting on the couch. Journey is probably in her room, and Kelly is at the dining table where she has her computer because she's been working like 60 hours a week in this one freaking math class. Don't take a subject that you are don't feel completely comfortable with in a compressed summer schedule.
Yeah.
It's kicking her ass. Anyway.
You can tell her I empathize with her deeply because I did the same thing.
She spends most of her time sitting at a computer doing math.
Yes.
Which is wild. But anyway, so I'm sitting there And then she's like, hey, what's that sound? I'm like, what sound? Like a hissing sound. I'm like, well, hissing's not good. So she gets up and she looks, she goes, walks in the kitchen. She's like, our refrigerator's leaking. I'm like, our refrigerator's leaking. Where does the refrigerator even leak from? Come on, man. Sure enough, refrigerator. So we had to wiggle the refrigerator out from the wall and turn off the water that goes in. It feeds into it, so you have ice and water, and that stopped the leaking. So it wasn't like some weird internal thing. Well, I mean, it was some weird internal thing, but
like the water tank.
Something. So we're like, oh man, but
your solenoid stuck open.
There was a sufficient amount of water.
Oh no.
That it was like, oh, okay. It's basically, we had to take like three big bath towels and wipe up all the water and it was done. However, had we been on time and had left to go to Palmer for all day, that would have cost us tens of thousands of dollars to repair. So oops. I will cut out my wife's great ears with, great ass, with, saving us tens of thousands of dollars. We had to take a rain check and we saw our, my mother-in-law, and, father-in-law, on the 9th, I think, because we had to have a repairman come in. Also, we had the repairman come in and fix the igniter on our oven that hasn't been working since before Thanksgiving. So, you know, now granted, it's been like nearly 80 degrees, so we're not doing a lot of oven cooking, but at least it's now an option where it wasn't before. So that's cool.
Four words, Garth Brooks, Unanswered Prayers.
Okay, I don't understand it, but...
You were like praying that they would get their asses out on time.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I don't know. I guess that's a country song that has an ending about unanswered prayers. Yeah, I'll have to figure it out what that means, but I'm sure it's brilliant. It turns out it was a cracked... apparently, there's the filter filter housing that has a crack in it that was causing the... So somehow it just spontaneously cracked.
Pressure.
Yeah, well, but, I mean, over the course of however long, but... it'll probably all, when all is said and done, we're still waiting for the part on that one. When all is said and done, it's probably going to cost us about, I want to say less than $600 for both repairs.
That's not bad. Because
turns out it costs a lot to come out and look at shit.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly looked at me and she's like, why am I doing math? I should be learning appliance repair. I'm like, yeah, there's that. But do you really crawl around appliances? She goes, no. But, you know, still.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And could I have fixed the igniter and the oven myself? Sure. Do I want to even today? No.
Hey, you're talking to the guy that still doesn't like to light propane grills. You're preaching to the choir.
No, Kelly enjoys doing things like making French fries like with hot oil on the stove and like that kind of stuff.
Like in a Dutch oven or something?
No, in a
kettle?
Like a 2-quart pot or something, yeah.
Oh boy.
I know. Hey, I lived in fear from fondue night, yes. Of having a lap full of oil. So I'm not gonna be putting
we didn't want to be the McDonald's coffee lady.
Oh my God, yes.
I actually learned to make I made up a recipe, but I've kind of muddled through it online from something online for make these amazing French fries in the air fryer. So,
yeah, well, you know, I'd love to have that recipe. And also, I shouldn't be eating French fries anyway. So I don't know. French fries really aren't for me.
Yeah. But I also, you won't want this either. They also make s'mores in the air fryer.
That sounds delightful.
They're so much. I'm not even going to go into it. Just do it. It will make your life easier.
Well, you'll have to let me know how that works.
It's fabulous. We've already done it.
You'll need to let me know the process.
but I can cook one of those Totino's cardboard pizzas in 6 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
That
in the air fryer?
Oh, yeah.
I love the air fryer.
Although
we went from, you know, we originally had an air fryer with the traditional basket thing. Which actually works a lot better in a lot of ways than the one we have now, which is like the toaster oven slash air fryer. But I find that I use the toaster oven slash air fryer, not on air fryer mode, but on like super convection mode.
They're making full size air fryer ovens. So
that's amazing.
I'm pretty sure they had those 15 years ago. They called them convection ovens.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah,
it's funny.
Yeah, the difference is basically whether the heat, like if you just do a super convection broiler, that's all a air fryer is.
Yeah,
but I'm a fan of the air fryer. I'm just gotta be careful. I gotta get back on the wagon as far as my health for eating. Sure. Although I just went to the doctor and I'm fine. I'm actually it went a lot better than I thought it was gonna go. But still, as a man of circumference, I would like to be a man of smaller circumference.
Yes. That's a battle that comes for us all.
Yes, yes.
I'm back to dieting too. So I'm like, oh, I'm going to be super happy to be around.
Yeah, I'm waiting till this next week. This is the end of my vacation, so I'm not gonna. I'm not gonna intend to do those Last Supper things. But I'm definitely gonna take more. And now that we're all in one place that has a kitchen, I can actually bring my food to work again. Although. Well, anyway, when we get to the... anything else for the pod? You're off the pod next week, right?
Which will be a good thing.
I'm saying, yeah, that's... Well, by the way, if we hadn't talked about it before, this will be a good time. If you lasted this long and haven't either fallen asleep or given up because it's housekeeping time, we're kind of back on our schedule now where we're doing a two-person pod. Except for like once a month, we'll have a three-person pod.
So for the next 8 months, when the three of us are together, we're doing Marvel movies.
Oh well, not necessarily. I mean, and we can always dip in. I was actually thinking of just dropping in because I was available for First Man. And then I thought, nope. You know what? I'm just gonna be a listener when I edit, and it was a lot of fun.
You need to watch it though.
Yeah, I've heard. Yeah. No, I will. I have it. I can watch it.
It is quite good. It is worth it. I'm excited to rewatch it. I'm going to wait a couple weeks because I got a lot going on this week.
Yeah. Oh, question for you.
Yes.
So I've been watching a lot of horror movies, found footage horror movies, because I found a couple that were actually kind of satisfying. I don't have a list here, so I won't name them. But here's a question for you, and I think I know the answer. But so I have, 3 days left? Of my vacation, and do I try to power through Good Omens all in one big block, or should I take Good Omens, the series, in smaller doses and continue with my found footage movies?
So,
because I just got the Good Omens,
I would watch the first episode and make that decision.
Okay,
if you can, because they're long.
Yeah,
okay. I think they're almost 2 hours an episode. I want to say maybe I'm wrong, but I remember it being long. But if you can make it, I should back up. It's also dense. There is a lot going on.
I remember the book being super dense, which is part of its charm.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. I've actually watched it 3 times now. Okay. So watch the first episode, and then if you feel like you got everything out of the first episode, binge the rest of it.
Okay.
But you may want. We didn't do that. We watched an episode and then I sat with it for a while because there was a lot to unpack. And then we went back to it. So, but
actually,
it's excellent.
Okay. I do have something else for the pod.
Sure.
I have a recommendation.
Okay.
Have you bought Devolution yet?
I don't even know what that is.
That's the new Max Brooks book.
Oh, I think that I did.
Okay. As it turns out, it is great. By the way, I just got a text from Mom.
Yes.
The text says, Dad is watching 90 Day Fiancé. I'm using my headphones to watch Acorn TV. Horrible. Because we got, Journey got Dad hooked on 90 Day Fiancé and all of the offshoots.
I don't know what that is, so. I don't watch TV.
Okay, the premise of the original show is you get a visa for 90 days to come over to America for the prospect of getting married. And the question is whether or not you're going to be, make it or whatever. So they've got, but this has exploded. Remember when Trading Spaces became a huge deal, kind of out of nowhere?
No, because I never watched it. But I'll accept the premise.
All right. Well, okay. How about Bachelor? Right, Bachelor. Well, anyway. So see, here's how this works out. It started out with 90 Day Fiance.
I think my Big Fat Gypsy Wedding is the only thing that I watched regularly.
Okay. Well, so my 90 Day Fiance is one thing, right?
Okay.
And then they've done 90 days the other way, where the person goes to the other country.
Okay.
And then they do before the 90, where they shoot people before they do their 90 day thing. And then they do 90 days after, where after the 90 days, they go back and interview people. And now they've done this thing where, I guess there's a thing called Gogglebox in British TV, where it's basically people, this cast of like basically couples, friends or romantic couples or whatever, who watch reality TV and comment with it. So basically that's the only new programming is the people's reaction to it. And yet, by the way, the Gogglebox is the funniest part of reality TV. Like, you don't ever have to watch the show. It's having these wide assortment of people, especially in British TV, because they use all the swear words.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. So now they have 90 Day Fiancé Pillow Talk, which is basically the Gogglebox thing, where you've got all these people, some of which I think were contestants at some point on 90 Day Fiancé, who are watching the 90 Day Fiancé shows and commenting about it as it happens. It's crazy. It's got the tentacles all over the place, and Journey has gotten dad hooked on it. It's like judge shows where, you know, you enjoy the process of it. You enjoy like the judges as characters.
It's formulaic.
Yeah, totally formulaic. And yet there's lots of diversity. I don't mean diversity, like cultural diversity. I just mean storyline diversity. Because it's basically like, who wants to get their green card is what the whole thing is about. But you've got like all these different things. Like you get involved in the, I don't necessarily, although I know these characters now, cause it's been on TV in my vicinity in a while, but it's like, you've got the 50 something year old lady who goes to Africa to marry her like late 20s or early 30s year old husband. But of course the family doesn't approve because she's an extremely white Southern lady. Yeah. And then you've got like the gold digger Ukrainian brides and the never be satisfied pampered Brazilian brides. And it's always like the schlubby men, because that's what happens. Like mail order bride is all about schlubby men trying to get women who are trying to get out of their horrible existence.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway.
It sounds like the seventh circle of hell is what that sounds like. But
that's what Mama's dealing with. That's why she has her headphones on watching Acorn TV, so she can watch the other part of British programming.
I do indeed have Devolution. I haven't listened to it yet. I finished the Mary Trump book.
Oh, yeah. How do you recommend it?
So I said earlier on Facebook, because Casey's wife, Dina, Casey's Derek's sister, younger sister. Somebody else asked me if I'd read the book, and I said, "Oh no, I finished it all in one day." She said, "What do you think?" I'm like, "It explains why he's the way he is, and it basically is insight into." Everything centers around him, and he's been propped up on all of his failures and built up his whole life and never held accountable or responsible. And so he is a product of his upbringing, and he's never going to change because nothing's going to force him to change. There's no power that can. It was just basically a lot of background about the family, which just... Again, not justifying what he is and what he does, but it's telling you like, oh no, he really is that way. He's not, it's not an act. It's not a cutting slight fox kind of thing. He really is just kind of deranged. It talks about her background some, and I don't know that I can recommend it because it wasn't really satisfying in any way, because it wasn't anything we don't already know through osmosis. Yeah. So, I guess some of the story is that We get more about the family. We know more about the background. And that was kind of interesting, knowing about, you know, where the money came from and how the family built up the assets.
Does it in any way make him more of a sympathetic character?
No. Actually, it makes him worse. Yeah, he's done horrible things his entire life. Also, he hates dogs.
Oh, well, there you go.
So that's one of those things that ticks the boxes of crazy lunatic.
Finally, something we can agree on.
So yeah, no, but it talks. I mean, their family is full of crazy. So
yeah.
But his, you know, one of his brothers died before he was 50 because he was an alcoholic. So
that's Mary's dad.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Freddie. So, I don't know. I got it on Audible, so I listened to her. It's her voice. She reads it. Like I said, it was informative, I guess, but no, it was in no way satisfying. I didn't come away with it with anything I didn't really already sense or know. Not unlike the Bolton book, where I just came away from that wanting to just punch him repeatedly in the balls. So, yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, if you want, I mean, it.
No, I think I'm good. I mean, like, I only got like 3/4 of the way through Bolton book because I feel like I got the gist of it. And it, because I wanted to listen to it, not only to hear the stories, which turns out we already heard before, except now we have more confirmation, but also just the fact that this is the most self-serving guy ever.
Well, Bolton or Trump?
Oh, Bolton for writing the book. I mean, yeah.
Well, you know.
He's whining
in the book about how nobody would listen to him.
Yes.
What?
No, I know.
Like, nobody would listen to you, so you wrote a book.
Well, also, he's like, I've been playing these guys, and all these other guys are playing the president, too, but I'm playing this other game. It's like, you think you're so smart, but it just proves that you're exactly what we thought you were.
Yeah. Yeah, you're just a bunch of wankery. I mean, you wrote a book for no... That certainly doesn't make you look good. The book makes you look like a big horse's ass as you really probably are in real life, so...
Well, yeah. I mean, again, he's a true believer. Except his, you know...
He's not.
What did Tom Lehrer say? What's the quote? His allegiance is ruled by expedience.
Yes.
Nazi schmatzy.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, I finished the Bolton book only because I made myself, because I just had to finish it.
Yeah. But
yeah, he's just a vile waste of human flesh.
Anyway, on that note, so take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow and maybe rambling. That's the Brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey!